Hey, this is Gerd's Handel, and welcome to the Inner Light Project. This show is for anyone who's wanting to lead a happier, healthier, and enlightened life. Create more self-love, inject more joy and abundance into their daily life. Join me for inspiring interviews and spiritual topics so you can shine your inner light.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Inner Light Project. My name is Gerd Tunzel and today I'm so grateful to share with you somebody that is really helping people to heal their nervous system. I thought it was really important with the theme of this month, which is about resistance. Now, every month we talk about a different theme. So in January it was surrender, in February it's sobriety, and now it's about resistance. And I just want you to just sit for a moment and think about what is it you're resisting in your life at the moment? What is it that is holding you back from being your true authentic self? And what is it that you're not allowing to receive the medicine from within? Because when we can pay attention to what we are resisting, we can really set ourselves free, but we have to allow ourselves to really feel, deal, and heal it in order to move forward with our life. Now, as I mentioned, this lady is just amazing at what she does. She helps women to heal their nervous system. Kimber Molden, she is a nutrition consultant and a women's health coach, and she helps women to regulate their nervous system with nutrition and tools to help them self-heal. She also helps them to self-nourish and also to self-regulate. And I think it's so important to really tap into this today, because when we are able to self-soothe, we are able to take our power back. Now, a lot of us grew up with trauma, and we weren't taught how to self-soothe. Maybe one of our parents weren't there to support us emotionally. And therefore, we've kind of gone out there to kind of find a way to self-soothe through codependency or through a trauma bond. But actually, when we self-soothe, we actually are self-soothing our inner child who is just missing that connection and bond with herself. And so this is why I wanted to talk about this on the show today.
Hi, Kimber. I'm so grateful to have you on the show. And thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, bless you. Well, I just was interested in having you on the show because you talk about two different areas that are, you know, somatics and nutrition. And I'd love first, though, to share what your life was like before you became a women's health coach.
Yeah. So I think my background before health was in early child development and birth work. And so I actually, my first degree was in early child development, and I worked with small children and babies, and then went into doula work, specifically postpartum doula work. And so I was helping new moms and newborns. And I've always had an interest in nutrition. I've personally have had a lot of health challenges that I started to identify in my teens. And I took the medical route for, you know, throughout my whole teens, took antibiotics for my skin, took steroids for eczema, was on multiple different drugs for depression, anxiety, OCD. I also had an eating disorder. So I had a lot of stuff going on. And I didn't have anyone, around to help me understand what was actually happening and like link it to stress or trauma. Mm-hmm. And so I was basically just pathologized for the vast majority of my teens. And then when I hit 20, I realized I had just like a kind of a deep message came from within that was like the medical route is not working for you. Like you're not actually getting better. You're just on a bunch of drugs. So I wouldn't recommend this to most people, but I actually just kind of went cold turkey and went off of most of my meds.
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it for people. That was the choice I made. I was 20. I had a lot of freedom in how I did things. I didn't have anyone else telling me how to run my life at that point. So I went off of all of my medications, and then decided to leave school towards the end of my early child development degree. I actually went back and finished it later on, but leave school and go to. Moved to San Francisco from where I was currently living. And then I went through a holistic health program. So that was like a pretty ungrounded program. It was a lot of like, you know, learning about your aura. And I mean, there's like, and there was also it was a massage school who also happened to have a holistic health program. And I didn't end up doing anything with it, but it was my first taste of the concept of holistic. So this idea that the whole body and mind and spirit are all working together, you can't isolate, you know, psychiatric disorders from things that are going on in your gut or things that are going on in your, you know, your life in general. And so for that reason, it was incredibly helpful for me in that reason, for that reason. But I definitely didn't really understand health from a more balanced perspective. The people that ran that program were mostly like vegan and leaning like raw food. And wow. There's a lot of cleansing that was, you know, people around me were doing a lot of cleansing all the time. And looking back, it was like a lot of ungrounded, dysregulated people in the health. And so my health kind of, you know, I was vegan for the first half of my 20s. That didn't go well for me. My health just got worse and worse until I finally needed to start eating animals again for the sake of just like basically getting enough calories in. And then it was like a slow process of like figuring out, working with several different naturopathic doctors throughout my 20s, trying different kinds of diets, investing out of pocket thousands of dollars in, you know, supplements and integrative doctor visits, and not really fully understanding what's going on with me. And so I decided to go back to school at the end of my 20s. And originally I thought I was going to be a dietitian. And so I went back to college for hard sciences and then was planning on transferring into a dietetics program. But at that point, I think I had, you know, I had already done a lot of internal work with myself. I had already learned more about holistic approaches and mindset. And so when I was towards the end of completing my just like 2-year science degree and was looking into dietetics programs, I was just feeling really disheartened at how non-holistic the dietetics programs were. And so and then I reached out to a few dietitians that I admired online, asking them their opinion. And, you know, obviously they weren't going to tell me what to do, but they were like, if you already have some understanding of nutrition and you don't feel aligned with these programs, I recommend you find an alternative program. And so I took my 2-year science degree and I went to a private holistic nutrition school. And, that was another 2 years of training. And then I also, after that, I honestly did not know. And even until the last few years, I didn't really know how to build a business. And so that felt really daunting. So I just kept going through trainings. So I was like, I'll just keep educating myself. That way I can avoid actually having to be a business owner or like figure out what to do with my life. And so, I ended up going through a holistic health coaching program, integrative health coaching program. And then I did some functional medicine programs and then just, you know, went to seminars and kind of accrued more and more education that way. And it wasn't until 2018 about when I really took off and started actually doing the coaching work. So during that whole time, I was still working with children. And I actually find the transition from working with children and young moms to new moms to working in health to be a pretty easy shift, because you're actually looking at like, you know, how our systems are first starting out when you're looking at a developing baby, and, you know, how the mother does with the pregnancy and postpartum. And so there was already a lot of knowledge that I had there. And then for the first few years of my coaching business, it went pretty slowly as I tried to figure out. I adopted a lot of other people's business models, which apparently, you know, adopting a very masculine or like adopting a business model from someone that doesn't really align with who you are, it turns out that doesn't really work.
Yeah.
So,
So
I did that for a few years and worked pretty much with just like anyone, didn't really have a niche or anything. And then what I was seeing is patterns of people that were coming to work with me. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, it was women, you know, like women in my age range. So like 20s, 30s. And so in 2020, I decided to build my first health course. And that was when I narrowed it down and decided I'm going to work only with women now. Mm-hmm. And so I took quite a bit of time to build that course, to do, you know, thorough research, to just look at like what, you know, what's unique about women, and specifically when it comes to health, that, you know, differentiates us from men. You know, what is even just like some really deep shit, like, what does it mean to be a woman myself? because I kind of grew up not really feeling comfortable in my own skin and not even necessarily referring to myself as a woman. I didn't identify as a different, you know, gender or sex. I just didn't really feel comfortable being in my feminine and being a woman.
Mm.
So I had to do some soul searching around like what that means for me. And then, yeah, I started, you know, I launched that course and the beginning of, was it the end of 2020, beginning of 2021. And then from there, just, yeah, continued to build my business working specifically with women. And the nutritional niche that I kind of grew my business within is often referred to pro-metabolic or bioenergetic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is like, it's basically just, you know, it's a unique and in my opinion, more like it's aligned with my understanding of energy metabolism. So like what the science actually says, and it's basically looking at the health of the cell and like how well our cells are actually able to function based on whether they're able to produce energy to fuel the whole body, which is going to, you know, you're going to look at your minerals, your glucose metabolism, your stress levels. And from there, you can actually dictate a lot of, you can look at a lot of other aspects of health that would go on top of that, basically. Wow. So, yeah. So it actually like differentiates you quite a bit from other areas of nutrition, because a lot of nutritionists, I just noticed, and this is not definitely like calling anyone out or anything, but like I've noticed over the years, and I fell into this camp as well for a while, of just not really taking energy metabolism into account when making recommendations. So a lot of low carb diets, a lot of restrictive diets, a lot of, you know, you're having a health issue, let's remove this food, like remove this food. A lot of like fear of high blood sugar to the detriment of like, you know, stress management, mm-hmm. because the body uses carbs, glucose in order to regulate stress response. So yeah. So working with women and then doing, you know, the main test I run, is a hair tissue mineral analysis. And so I started working more in depth with that, went through some trainings for that. And I just started seeing these patterns over and over and over again of women that were metabolically very stressed, and the nutrition for a lot of them wasn't enough. And so that's when I started to look more towards nervous system regulation work and trauma work, and went into some trainings for that. And that's the direction my business is moving in now. It's integrating a lot more relational support, attachment support, working with complex trauma, and then doing like nervous system regulation work.
Wow. I love it. Yeah. I love it. I think, and it just shows your journey of how far you've come. And the thing is, I relate with a lot of things that you're saying, because like I grew up with acne and taking antibiotics, looking back thinking, God, why did I do that? You know, lots of different health. I grew up with an eating disorder as well, like lots of different health problems back in the day growing up, but I didn't really understand it. But now I realize a lot of it is to do with stress, but also if we're not speaking our truth or expressing ourselves, it can cause damage in the body, and then that's why things happen to us, like we don't always understand it. But as well, like trauma is stored in the body, and I think a lot of people don't understand that, and it's so important to look at your nutrition side as women as well, because over time our body changes and we need to learn to understand how our body works. And like the thing about you saying about bioenergetics, it's so important energetically, because everyone is so different. And I think that's sometimes like in the medical system, they don't always understand that every patient is different. You can't just put them into a box and say, oh, that's why that's happening to you. It's always going to be different.
Yeah, 100%. It's scary to think like most of the advice that we're getting in, you know, health-wise is either we're receiving it indirectly online from information online from influencers online, or we're reading in a book, or we're going to the doctor. And even the doctor is giving you generalized information unless you are working with a, you know, integrative naturopathic doctor and they're spending hours poring over your labs. And otherwise it's usually pretty general. And then I would say, even when you're working with a naturopathic and integrative doctor, you could be investing quite a bit of money and time into that, and they still might be providing you with some level of general support because they're not looking at your nervous system and your trauma history.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I 100% relate with what you're saying. And the reason I understand this is because I do trauma work. That is my background. But also, I've healed. I've been on this journey for 11 years, and the best healing work was looking from within, understanding it. But when I got sick, so I actually had a kidney problem, Kimber, and I didn't know till I had hit 30. And it took them 2 years to figure it out. And then I had an operation to reconstruct my right kidney. And I had like a knot as well in my uterine pipes. It's a long story. But then on the back of it, I got kidney disease, and the doctors didn't really could figure out why it was happening or the reasons behind it. And I was kind of left on my own to figure it out. And then obviously doing the work that I do, like I started to understand emotionally and things. And then also I ended up like discovering somebody that actually could help me. And within 7 months, I reversed my kidney disease.
Wow. Incredible. That's, yeah. I mean, that is a testament to like how much I genuinely do, although I can't make, obviously I'm not going to make like overarching claims about what people can do as far as healing, because it's but I will say that like from an energetic perspective, and I mean energy, like energy within the cell, like actually like biochemistry, the body wants to run well.
Yeah.
Like it wants to heal, it wants to repair and restore, because it actually is very energy inefficient to be sick and to have chronic illness and to have chronic, you know, disruptions throughout the body. The problem is that most of us don't actually know what we need in order for that to happen. And there's often a lot of scary changes that we have to make in order to get to a place where the body, you know, the body has what it needs to heal and repair. And so I think between those two things, it can be really hard. And a lot of us live in a reality where you get sick and then you know, sometimes you don't get better.
Yeah.
Fortunate, a very limited reality that a lot of us live in.
And I think that's where we have to question sometimes, like the medical system is great. I'm not mocking it or disrespecting it. I think we need the medical system, because if we don't know what's happening, then how can we sort it out? So, you know, we wouldn't be able to have our scans or understand what's happening, or if we need an operation. It's just working together with the medical system and the holistic side to get you the best results to help you on your journey.
Yeah, definitely. And I often say, again, I'm not familiar with the medical system outside the US very much. I know, you know, there's definitely like overlap, but what we have is an emergency medical system. So like when you have an emergency, it's a godsend, like to be able to have to go into a hospital when you have an accident or an injury or, you know, something that you weren't aware was going on that then reached a level where it becomes an emergency state, acute infections. But I think for, unfortunately, like 99% of what gets treated in the US at least isn't emergency. You might get to an emergency state, but they're chronic issues. And so using emergency interventions for chronic issues isn't working for us. It's not actually, it's not helping people heal.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, that, I understand what you're saying. That's so true. Can you help explain how you're helping women to regulate their nervous system?
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the things that women still tend to come to me for the most is nutrition support, because that's, I think it's just also easier and more understandable what a nutritionist does. And so I still definitely, you know, with every single one of my clients, nutrition is a component of that. And I think, you know, just to help maybe explain the connection between nutrition and nervous system, if you want, like why I would use nutrition for that.
Sure.
So our metabolism and our nervous system are like intertwined. They, you know, on all levels, they impact each other. And the nervous system is basically like our operating system that regulates our stress response, energy regulation. And so when we have dysregulation, when we have a nervous system that doesn't really downregulate, that doesn't shift out of a stressful situation, that gets trapped in kind of a stressed out state for too long, we end up burning through our resources faster. So this means that we end up releasing sugar into the blood way more often than we should. We end up oftentimes like in a low blood sugar state as a result of that. You know, if it goes on long enough and we lose the capacity to store glucose in the liver, then we end up breaking down our own tissue. in order to get the glucose that our brain needs to function, as well as like other parts of the body, specifically the brain though. And then that's a stressful process. So that activation, to break down our own tissue, we have to use cortisol. That's one of cortisol's main jobs. So as a result of that, women end up with too much cortisol circulating in their system for too long, which increases inflammation, usually can affect histamine metabolism, it affects sleep. So just like affects every system in the body, essentially. And then you burn through your resources faster. So you're burning through your minerals and your vitamins way faster than you're replacing them. So using food for regulation basically means looking at, you know, getting your minerals up, since our bodies run off of enzymes, like they're like the spark plugs that make the entire body and mind work. And when we, and our enzymes are built primarily off of minerals. So if we're stressed all the time, then we're burning through our minerals quite fast. So we're losing our minerals. Therefore, our enzymes are going down. When that happens, all kinds of stuff can start to go wrong within the system. So using minerals, and then also making sure you're getting enough macros, getting enough protein, you're getting enough glucose so that you can actually keep your blood sugar stable. Those are ways to use food to regulate. And then I also, went through a program called Neurosomatic Intelligence. And that's looking at neuroplasticity. So the fact that the brain is constantly changing in response to the signals, the inputs that it's taking in, both cognitive inputs as well as like sensory inputs from our environment and whatnot. Looking at how we're affecting the brain by what we're telling it with the information we're taking in. Mm-hmm. And when I say information, I mean like light, sounds, like not just like things we're reading, but like every signal that we take in as a human being through our eyes, through our ears, through our skin, we're sending a message to the brain. So you can actually start to work with that using applied neurology. So like neuro drills to reconnect the brain to different parts of the body and to start to lower some of that stress that so many of us are living with due to either too many signals that we're taking in where we're just overstimulated, or we're taking in information and it's not clear to the brain. So the brain gets more stressed out when information's not clear. So I help clients using the neurosomatics and those drills, which primarily have only been used in the fields of like high-end athletics and, you know, severe pain disorders. That's when applied neurology tends to get used the most. So a lot of people have never even heard of it. Hmm. And then I also went through some trainings for somatic attachment. So working with people's attachment system and looking at their attachment patterns, relational patterns, any kind of like relational or attachment traumas. And then I also was trained in something called NARM, which stands for Neuroaffective Relational Model. And it's a training that I did to address complex trauma. So like CPTSD. And you look at both like a top down. I'm sure you've probably heard of like the concept of top down and bottom up.
I haven't actually, no.
I can explain that. So in somatics, in the world of like trauma support, we talk about top down and bottom up. Top down is what most people are familiar with. I would say it's like what the vast majority of this culture is based on. It's when you're using upper corticoid functions of the brain to process information cognitively in order to make changes within your body. So you're addressing the nervous system through those cognitive functions and going down into the body. So an example of that would be talk therapy is a top-down approach. Cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness meditation is actually top down because you're still focusing, you're using the mind, the conscious mind to then go in into the body and shift the states of the body. And so bottom up is actually going directly into the body to address the nervous system and the brain functions. So that would be, breath work would be an example of that. Somatic experiencing. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's a pretty common it was designed to address PTSD. Wow. So you basically like work with the nervous system to kind of, like you were saying, trauma gets stored in the body. So when we have trauma stored in the body, we have to actually, if we want to release it, we have to go in through the body. A lot of it's unconscious, right? Like we don't even know it's there.
That's why, sorry, I was just going to say, that's why dancing is so powerful, because there's, for women especially, there's trauma stored in the hips. And when you release your hips and allow yourself to move, a lot of that energy that's stored releases.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, dancing is an excellent source of, also, like, especially if you're doing dances that are like more free form and that involve more like shaking or, you know, like, yeah, anything that involves like hip motions or stomping, the whole concept of, so Peter Levine was the man that developed somatic experiencing. This is like back in the, I don't know, I think the 80s or something. And what he noticed is that like wild animals don't tend to store trauma like domesticated animals do. You know, domesticated animals would include humans. And so he started to pay attention to the physiology and behavior patterns of wild animals. Like, how is it that an animal can get chased by a predator and almost lose its life and then go on living? It doesn't like, you know, fall over with anxiety or like suddenly develop depression or like what's going on there. And what it is they have specific ways of moving the, releasing the trauma that came, the stress patterns that come up when they almost you lose their life. Like when they have something stressful happen to them, they can shake it out. They can make certain sounds. You know, they actually allow those stressful experiences, those energy to move through their body and get released so that it doesn't get stored and actually distort their behavior moving forward.
Wow.
Right. So domesticated animals store it. We tend to, a lot of it is because we, you know, we've been, a lot of us are not embodied anymore. We've moved more and more into intellectual states. So, and then there's also just like, you know, a lot of us are really uncomfortable with trembling or shaking, or we don't really know how, it's like lost wisdom. We don't really know how to like release trauma when it's stored in our bodies. And so somatic experiencing actually teaches that. It shows you ways to like ride the waves of your nervous system expression so that you can release what needs to be released in a way that's safe. And so with this NARM work that I do, you combine top down and bottom up. So you do the nervous system work when it's needed, and you also support clients and you know, because we all kind of, we have different levels of safety as far as like being able to be in our bodies and feel stuff. So it's really important to meet people where they're at. And yeah, a lot of people are not really comfortable with doing 100% somatic work.
Oh, 100%. You know? Because you don't have to look at our generation. Like we grew up in this kind of masculine energy, right? Like our mothers were in that, you know, it's generational. And then suddenly it's all like, be in your feminine, let yourself be free, you know, you know, and it, being in the energy is powerful. Like I was the same, like I was the alpha female back in the day. And I look back and go, oh my God, how much stress did I put on my body? And it was only when I started doing the inner work 11 years ago and, you know, releasing and dancing and, you know, lots of different things. And, you know, we're afraid, you know, we're afraid of letting whatever we're feeling go. But, you know, once you start, my gosh, like it just sets you free. It really does, doesn't it? I'm sure the same happened with yourself.
It does. I do think when you're doing any kind of trauma work, and definitely when you're doing somatic work, because there's, you know, that word somatic is which basically, if anyone's curious, it just means like of the body, the soma, the body. So when you're doing any kind of somatic therapy or coaching or trauma work, you do want to make sure that you have tools for integration. So you're not just going into a session and then filling a bunch of shit and opening yourself up to stuff that gets released. And then you go about your day and have to deal with it on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, cause it can be freeing, but it can also be like people are not in their bodies for a reason. So that's like something that we get taught in neurosomatics is like, there's a reason people disassociate. There's a reason we freeze and collapse. Those are adaptive survival mechanisms. And so we actually have to create safety within the body so people can be in their body more.
Yeah, I think we haven't been taught. That's the thing. We haven't been taught to be safe in our body. And this is why we feel this disassociation, because from a young age, you know, we're told by society who to become, act, behave, family, you name it. But we don't have that knowledge of self and that connection with our bodies, which is so important that we need that.
Well, yeah, totally. Yeah, it is a cultural thing. It's not just individual. I mean, you could be someone who had a healthy upbringing and you didn't have any like trauma that you're aware of, and you might still have you know, some issues in disembodiment or disassociation patterns, just simply because of going through the school system, or, you know, it's just like there's a lot of kind of like power over in this culture, where it's like you need to behave, you need to be quiet, you need to suppress. Yeah. And then we see that in the medical system too, right? Like, again, even though emergency medicine is a miracle, we also do, when we're misapplying it and we're applying it to everything, then it's basically like, you know, I work with clients a lot around reframing their perception of health, because in our, again, in the US at least, it's a catastrophic. Like if you have a symptom or a, you know, quote unquote disorder, then there's this catastrophic fear that your body is a ticking time bomb. And so being healthy for a lot of people, it just means not having any symptoms ever. And it's like really important for people to understand that like our symptoms are messages from the body, and you don't want to just turn them off because they're actually telling you that something needs to be, you know, you, it's not this, I think for a lot of us, again, we have a fear response. We have acne or we have digestive issues, and it's immediately like something is wrong with me. What can I do to make this go away as quickly as possible?
Hmm.
I was just going to say, I think we do that with our stress response too, right? Like we, starting again from a young age, like if we're stressed out, like children who tantrum, like who have like, you know, big emotions and they throw like a fit or something, like a lot of the times they're actually trying to regulate. Like that's what they're doing when they're like stomping their feet or like getting really loud. And what we tend to want to do as adults is like make them stop. And I understand why we'd want to make a child, like it's stressful to have a child that's just throwing this huge tantrum and they're like, you know, misbehaving, as you want to call it, or something. But like, if we are, you know, if we're like, as just take myself as an example, like I'm the middle of five children and we were all fairly neglected and we were all fairly poor. And so I used to have really big tantrums when I was little. Like I remember just like throwing these fits, getting really angry, screaming. I'd make myself really big and then I would get in trouble for it.
Mm.
And then I'd usually get sent to my room and I'd have to work it out on my own by myself. And usually what would happen was I would freeze and collapse because there was not anyone there that was, you know, when you're young, you don't know how to regulate your own nervous system or make sense of your own feelings.
Yeah.
So when adults leave you alone with them, you usually internalize them and make it mean something about yourself.
Yep.
And then you tend to freeze, collapse, you know, your nervous system just shuts down. There's nothing got resolved. You just had to shut down in order to be like a good girl or a good boy.
Yeah.
And
sorry, carry on.
Yeah. And then I would come out, you know, eventually I would come out and apologize for my behavior. And again, my parents didn't know what they were doing. Like, this is a really common pattern with a lot of children, especially like quote unquote problem children. And they got diagnosed with ADHD. So like that was kind of the explanation was, oh, she just has this disorder. But like looking back, it's like, no, I needed a lot of attention and I had like a lot of dysregulation and big feelings that I didn't feel safe. I didn't know how to deal with and I didn't feel safe in my own body. So I was making myself as big as possible to try to get attention so I could receive support that I needed to regulate. And when I didn't receive that, I had to just shut down because I didn't have a nervous system capacity to regulate myself, self-soothe. So I would just shut down and then I would fawn, which is what like coming out of the bedroom and apologizing was me fawning. So these patterns that we have when we're young, those like they continue into our adult life. They don't go away. They just show up differently in our adult relationships. So
it's interesting what you're saying, because like it doesn't happen to me now, but when I was younger, so I would, my sugar levels would go down. So I wasn't diabetic, but suddenly then I couldn't open my mouth. It was like a tightness. And it was because what you're saying, it was because I wasn't able to express my truth. I wasn't able to share how I was feeling. I was always told to toughen it up and don't show your emotions. And so that became my reality until my mid-20s. It was only till God, probably maybe about 7 or 8 years later, that I was able to heal it. And, you know, and realize what was happening. And like now I express myself fully. I, you know, I'm no longer a people pleaser. I don't sacrifice. But it's true. A lot of the things that happen or the health conditions we have are linked to our childhood and not being able to express ourselves freely.
Yeah, 100%. I think, and it's hard to be a small child because you don't know how, you don't know what's going on inside of you.
Yeah.
So when you have these really big feelings, or you don't feel safe, or you feel, or you have blood sugar issues because you're allowed to eat lots of candy and then your blood sugar drops, which is, you know, a lot of children, and then you, and your blood sugar drops.
Yeah.
And you don't understand what's going on, but you actually, your brain is actually in survival mode because your blood sugar is so low. And so I actually think this was an issue that I had as well when I was a kid, was my blood sugar was constantly low.
Mm.
And then as I went through my adolescence and early, you know, I developed this eating disorder. And I think part of it, at least part of it, was me trying to regulate my blood sugar by just like eating a bunch of sugar.
Oh my God. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And that's actually, unfortunately, really common. Like a large majority of my clients, you know, I work with females, and eating disorders is much more common amongst women.
Yeah.
A large majority of them have a history of eating disorders. And well,
you say that it's mostly within women, but actually that's not true. And the reason I'm saying that, the reason I know this as well, is because actually I produced a documentary about men with eating disorders. So I used to be a journalist I call it my previous life. And I interviewed a lot of men. The difference is it's hidden. And men don't express it the way women, and they don't make it as visible as women. But actually in men and women, there are eating disorders, but they're just shown in different ways.
Yeah, that would make sense. I think definitely women do diet more than men.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
I think that's probably like for a lot of women, because a lot of us are disorderly eating. It starts out with dieting. And, you know, there's just like so much research that shows that how damaging that can be to your brain.
Yeah.
To restrict calories or restrict carbs. Restrict fat, you know, whatever the diet is that we choose to do. But for a lot of us, we can actually like disrupt our metabolic and nervous system functions for an extended period of time through extreme dieting, especially if we're doing it when we're like 14 or 15 or, you know, 18 or something, when our brain is still growing. And we're like, ideally, we would be eating really well and like fully nourished during that period, because we're going through menarche. So we're actually going from being a little girl to being a woman. And you'd think we would have, ideally, in like, you know, an ideal culture, we'd be prepared for that.
Mm.
Like it's a really energy intensive time for the body to go from not being able to conceive to being able to conceive. And so, but what I see a lot is that's like a prime time when women start to diet and restrict their calories. And then that just makes the brain crazy, because it's, you know, it has a higher energy demand, and yet it's getting less calories than it needs.
I was going to say, what I found interesting as well, actually, when I produced a documentary, because actually it taught that when I realized actually I had an eating disorder growing up, I just didn't understand it at that point. It's when we feel like we have no control in our lives, then we try to control our food. So actually it's more about to do with control than actual food.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. I see that a lot too in my clients now, not necessarily like eating disorder, but in fact, I would say, especially in the last, you know, 6 months or so, I've started to place even more emphasis on relationships.
Mm.
Because I've noticed that a lot of my clients, and this is, I have fallen, you know, victim for this too, is like focusing when your needs aren't met, like when you are not happy in your life, when you have low energy, when you're stressed, when you have trauma or bad, you know, you're lonely or something, it's easier to change your diet and take some supplements than it is to actually look at all the other stuff.
Hmm.
And so I've definitely had a lot of clients where the food is the thing that they're fixating on. And, you know, they want to work harder to get their diet more dialed in, or, you know, they want more supplements, or they're, you know, trying to fix their labs. They get all these labs and then they want to make the lab results better. And I think that's a really, again, that's can be, a vicious cycle, because then you start focusing, you start dialing in on these like very specific things and getting more perfectionistic. And really what you're trying to do is you're trying to make yourself feel better about all the other areas of your life that you don't have control over, or that you have unmet needs.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. When it comes to relationships, that's quite interesting. It's almost like neglecting yourself as well on a deeper level. Instead of actually loving yourself, you're actually doing more harm.
Yeah. And I don't think, at least like in the US, we live in a pretty independent world now, like where we are taught that we can do a lot of things on our own.
Yeah. Same. Yeah.
And so I think for a lot of us, we get lonely, or we have relationships by default. So like we have relationships because we go to school with someone, therefore we become friends with them, or we go to college, or, you know, we get our first job, or so we meet people that just happen to be kind of like parallel to us in life. And I think for a lot of my clients, once they start to focus more on their health, they stop partying or drinking, or like their values change, what they spend their time on changes. They like deeply crave deeper relationships, meaningful relationships.
Yeah.
And if you don't have those, it's not always easy to just create them, build them. And so it's much easier to just like eat better.
Yeah.
And I think to circle back to the complex trauma, I actually have on my intake form for new clients, I have questions about complex trauma and like ACE scores, which I don't know if you haven't heard of that, I can explain what that is in a minute. But what I've noticed is clients who have a higher ACE score or who have more trauma that they're aware of, I tend to actually focus more on relationship development in our work together. Because oftentimes when we have complex trauma, it affects our relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tend to have less of them, or we tend to have less safe ones. We often will have more insecure dating patterns. So making sure you actually have the relationships that you need in your life. And then like even going deeper and examining what having a healthy relationship means. And if you want to like create your own relational, like we don't have to have the kinds of relationships that we saw growing up, or the kinds of relationships we see in movies and in shows. Like we can actually have more intimate relationships, and they can look differently than the nuclear family. And just knowing that that's a thing, like you can actually create, if you're not getting your relational needs met, then it doesn't matter how much food you're eating. Like you're going to have stress in your body, because humans are not meant to live alone. We're not meant to be lonely. And so it actually can affect us even more deeply than food, because our brain sees loneliness as a survival threat.
Mm.
So like looking at ways to increase your relationships. And for some of us, like having healthier relationships actually makes the nutrition stuff more effective, because our system feels safer, and therefore we actually absorb more of our nutrients. We're not, our blood sugar isn't as unstable. And because we're being touched every day, we're, you know, we feel like we're not alone.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, because yeah, we're designed to be part of a community. And I think that's where, I don't know, where somewhere in the Western world, we somehow decided that, you know, we can do everything by ourselves, but actually we're designed to be in communities. We're designed to support one another. And I think somewhere down the line, we've forgotten that we don't have to do things alone. We can ask for help. We can be in these amazing environments that help to nourish us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know, at least in the US, the statistic that like the demographic of people that tend to be most lonely is men, right? Like middle age and older men. But I've just been kind of, you know, it's been an eye opener for me to see how many of my clients are lonely and don't have friends, or don't have close friends, or, you know, don't date because it's too stressful for them. And these are women in their 20s and 30s.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so helping them, you know, because it only gets harder as you get older. So if you don't have close friends, or you don't have healthy, you know, romantic relationships, or you're sexually unfulfilled, where you just like, especially if you have health issues, like a lot of my clients have health issues, therefore they don't feel confident, or they have, you know, they don't drink, or they eat a special diet, or there's like things that make them feel already like it's harder to socialize.
Yeah.
But then it becomes this vicious cycle, because they end up lonely, and that actually can make it harder to heal.
I totally understand what you're saying, because I have clients where we do the trauma work, and you know, like you said, they have special diets, and then they're so afraid to share like their special diet. I'm like, well, if you don't share it, you're going to be stuck like indoors. Like you need to go out, you need to connect, you need community. And I think mm-hmm. there's this whole judgment and shame of what people will think, and I'm like, you'll find your people. but you have to get yourself out there. I think it's so important, again, like talking about community, it's so important. It doesn't matter what age you are, we all need support and help and guidance.
Totally. And I mean, we're, you know, one of the things I took away from my attachment coaching program is we are relational beings. So we don't actually exist outside of relationship. Like from the moment we come into the world, our, you know, our first exposure, the first signal that we get that we're safe is the presence of another grown up around us.
Mm.
And that never stops. Like even when we're alone and we're like, I do parts work. I don't know if you're familiar with like IFS parts work. It's a form of therapy internal family systems is what it originated from. And it's basically just this idea that humans are not single entities. We're multitudinous. So we have a lot of parts inside, and usually like the more parts we have, oftentimes we can develop them and as in a response to our external world. So like we have, again, this is just, you can, you know, there's a spiritual element to it of it too. You can like try on or adopt or look into, but we come into the world and we have like a pure self, you know, like an essence or whatever you want to call it. And then we develop parts in response to our experiences. Especially if you have trauma, you can develop protector parts, which are like, they're parts that are there to protect you from being hurt, being abandoned, being, you know, whatever, feeling shame. And so working with clients around their parts really helps them like to understand what needs they have that aren't getting met. And so, yeah, so that's actually been an incredibly helpful framework for a lot of my clients, because they have, when you're working with yourself or you're working with others, you're always working with some parts, right? Like, and you might actually feel internal conflict because you have parts that are in conflict. Like you have one part that says, I am this way. I would never do, you know, this and this. And you have other parts that are like, no, I am this way. And so trying to like make peace and reconcile your parts and actually allow them, it's like having internal children, right? And that can be a really helpful work when you're dealing with health issues, because we have a lot of parts that come up when we're healing, you know, a lot of parts that like feel like we're not good enough, like we don't deserve to heal, like it's not possible. And so working with those parts, instead of just like pretending like they're not there, you can actually like listen to them as if they're children that need to be heard.
Makes sense. That really makes sense.
I find it to be really liberating, again, because so many of us have a lot of internal conflict, you know, and how working on our health can bring up a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah. We are coming towards the end of the show. I've just got a few more questions left. What are your 5 top tips for someone who wants to heal their nervous system, but they don't really know where to start?
Yeah. I mean, I think I would say it depends on whether you want to work with someone or you want to, you know, there's a lot of information online. So you could definitely like, you know, if you were to look up just like Google nervous system regulation or somatic therapy, you would come up against a lot of options. And I would definitely say like, if you get the opportunity to work one-on-one with someone, that's the ideal way to do it, because it's such intimate work. And for a lot of us, like we don't really understand what's happening in our body until we start to spend time in it. And doing that work with someone that we feel safe with can really help to hold that container for us so that we can go into our body in like small doses. So I would say like that's one thing. It's just like looking at how you can get support with this. Also having compassion for yourself and like patience with yourself, because a lot of us have spent the vast majority of our lives not in our bodies, like in, or like dropping out of our bodies at various points in order to deal with stress. So not expecting yourself to just jump into your body right away and be embodied and like, you know, regulate your nervous system. It's a process. It takes time, you know? So I don't know if that's a really clear answer. But definitely. Yeah. And just understanding like everyone has a nervous system. So anyone that you're interacting with ever is you're dealing with their nervous system. And there's so many tools out there for regulating it and for working with it and understanding it. So I don't think it's necessarily that there's not enough information. I think it's more of just understanding that like, it's a journey and it's, you're not going to do it all at once. And you want to be So you want to be patient, gentle with yourself.
Yeah. What are you most grateful for?
This is a tricky one. There's a lot of things that I guess one of the things that I am grateful for is just being able to do this work, like being able to help women drop into their bodies, connect with themselves more, and feel confident that they have the power to take care of themselves.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Kimber, for being on the show and just sharing your story and just helping so many women to take back their power and control of their bodies.
Yeah, I feel so honored to have been on here. Thank you so much for having me and interviewing me. This was great.
What a great episode with Kimber. It's so important to self-soothe and self-nourish and really come back home to yourself, because when you do that, your health, your life, and everything will improve. Unfortunately, that's the end of the show. Before I leave, I want to leave you with this quote. Let food be thy medicine. That's a quote by Hippocrates. Take care, my sisters. Bye.
For more information about the show or how to trust your inner light, visit my new coaching program at gerdshundl.com. And remember, stay happy, stay healthy, stay lit.